That was some good fun. Hope you all enjoyed that. So, why should you know the story of the Good Samaritan? First, it is the most recognizable of all Jesus' parables. Second, it guides us onto how we live an authentic life. Third, it helps explain why the term Good Samaritan is such a part of our culture. Countless charities, hospitals, and ministries are named after the parable. We even have the Good Samaritan in legal code in some countries, where your liability is often limited if you are doing your best to help someone in an emergency. So what is this story? Jesus tells the story as part of his response to a lawyer's questions. A lawyer approaches Jesus, but he wasn't the kind of lawyer you're thinking of. He was an expert in the Old Testament laws and interpreted how they should be applied to society. I'd like to picture him as a professor-like person with a gray beard and a flashy tunic. We learn later that he cares more about his appearance, about how he appears to others, with a kind of show-off. So with fancy clothes, he comes to test Jesus. The scene is a confrontation. The lawyer has plenty of reasons to think Jesus is suspicious. You see, in nearly every page of Luke's gospel leading up to this encounter, Jesus had violated Old Testament laws. He cured on the Sabbath. He proclaimed forgiveness for sins. He shared the table fellowship with sinners, tax collectors, and prostitutes. He let the disciples pick grain on the Sabbath and didn't make them follow the prescribed ritual washings. And most curious was how he spent time with and cured people outside the faith. The lawyer The lawyer comes to set Jesus straight. Jesus' followers must have held their breath in anxiety, wondering how this would turn out. The lawyer asks, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus does the rabbi thing and by doing something we still teach in clergy today, he answers a question with a question. What does the law say, and how do you interpret it? Jesus recognizes that you don't just quote lines from the Bible, you have to figure out a reasonable way to apply them to your life. Jesus just lobbed him a softball question. Every Jewish kid had this answer memorized by the time they were 5 years old. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus says, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." The crowd exhales. That was easy. Everyone agrees. Let's go eat. But the lawyer hasn't had his Perry Mason or in a courtroom moment. So he baits the trap. And who is my neighbor? Luke tells us that he asked the question seeking to justify himself. He wants to show off how good a neighbor he is. He likely had stories of how he helped the next door neighbor kid, Benjamin, wipe off some dirt from his face, or how he mowed the rabbi's lawn. Of course, he gave 30 pieces to the Turn In Radicals Fund. To us, it sounds like he lobbed a softball question back to Jesus. Everyone knew the passage from Leviticus about loving one's neighbor. The context is about taking care of people, your people. The people who are like you, that you share things in common. When we think of our neighbors, we think of the same. When we think of neighbors, we think the same. Neighbors are people we share a postcode with, and social, economic, and demographic, and similar culture and worldviews. The trap the lawyer set was to get Jesus to say that the neighbors are like you. Share love with ones who are like you, your people, and ones around you. Those are the people you are responsible for. If Jesus had given that kind of answer, the lawyer would have said, "Then stay inside your circle, Jesus. Don't be messing with the tax collectors, sinners, prostitutes, foreigners, and especially the stinking Samaritans." What the lawyer wanted to know is not who the neighbor is, but who isn't my neighbor. How far out do I have to go to show care to people? Instead of giving the lawyer the answer he expected, Jesus did another typical rabbi thing. Answer a direct question with a story and more questions. Jesus makes up a story about a man on his way from Jerusalem to Jericho. This road was notorious for people getting mugged along the way. It would be akin to someone opening a story. A guy walking down Skid Row. This can't turn out well. You are not surprised to learn that he fell amongst thieves who robbed him, beat him, stripped him, and left him for dead. Now, the way Jesus tells the story, we are to see ourselves as the guy in the ditch. Some circumstances that could happen to anyone, and you lie there, your life drained away, there is hope. Along comes a priest, and you think, he's going to help. Man of God, dressed up in godly robes and majestic headwear, that's his duty. But nope, he walks on the other side of the path to avoid him. This is funny because this was a narrow path. It's not like a four-lane motorway like on the M1 or M25. The priest had to practically step over the man. Jewish expectation was that, of course, the priest was supposed to give assistance, no question, but he didn't. Maybe he didn't want to get involved. Maybe he thought it would be a trap to fall into. Maybe he thought the guy had it coming, putting himself in danger like that, wandering around in this neighborhood. Maybe he didn't have time. After the priest, a Levi came along. Levites were people who had special roles in the service of God for worship and taking care of religious business. But he also passed by. How does it feel to be passed over twice by people who represent institutions that are supposed to help? Along comes a third man. Everyone listened to Jesus was expecting the third man to be an Israelite because there were jokes and stories that involved the triad of priest, Levite, and Israelite. Just like we'd start a story with a priest, a minister, and a rabbit walking into a bar. And the rabbit says, "The only reason I'm here is because of spell check." But Jesus didn't follow the typical form of a priest, a Levite, and an Israelite. He substitutes a Samaritan for the Israelite. The crowd would have gasped at Jesus' subversion of the regular story. Not a priest, Levite, and Israelite, but a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan. Now, to say there was animosity and hate between the Jews and the Samaritans would be the understatement of the year. The divisions were ugly. Ancient hatred on both sides. When one Jewish person called another Jew a Samaritan, it was the biggest insult you could make. Even after calling this the story of the Good Samaritan, as cringy as it implies, there was only one good one, not like all the other scumbags. So along comes the Samaritan, and he has compassion for the man. Moved by his compassion, he goes to extraordinary lengths to save the guy. He bounds his wounds, pours oil and wine on them, puts him on his own animal, took him to an inn, opened an account with the innkeeper. You see, Luke, sometimes there is room in the inn, and said, "Whatever it takes, however long it takes, get him back on his feet and put this on my account." Then Jesus asked the lawyer, "Which of these three was the neighbor to the guy in the ditch?" "The one who showed mercy," said the lawyer. So Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." You see, the lawyer wanted to know what he had to do to get to eternal life. The answer is to love God with your whole self and love your neighbor. But neighbor includes enemies, people in need, and people who've made mistakes. Our Christian ethic is rooted in this story. We are people who help. We are people who get involved to improve our neighborhood. We also respond to Jesus' invitation to expand the circle of who we consider our neighbors. Sometimes when we give money to people overseas, people ask, why are you sending money to help those when they are hurting people right here? Part of the answer is that we remind ourselves that Jesus challenges us to widen our circle of care. Our neighbors are those in need anywhere in the world. We are connected to them in God's eyes. When God looks at the world, our divisions and national boundaries are nothing. It's one world, and if we are going to sense God, it means to love our neighbors, to help even those who aren't like us, those who are in need. With so much need in the world and around us, how can we respond to all of it? There is just so much we can do. Taken too far, the story might seem that we should just hop out of our car every time we see a homeless person and give them our money or credit card. Early church theologians felt this too and came up with an allegorical interpretation. Jesus is the outsider to the religious establishment, who shows mercy on people, who gives lavishly and sacrifices to make us whole. He brings us to the inn, as seen as the church, a community that helps us back to wholeness when life beats us up. But that is taking the story beyond its intention, its context. There were times when Jesus had to walk away from healing people to go and care for himself. We do what we can. We open our hearts. We give through the church and belong to a church that is doing good, providing resources. We give to agencies or societies that make sure people's stories check out and they aren't running some kind of scam. That's how we sleep at night. So that is an explanation of the Good Samaritan and how we fit into that, being either one of those people in the story.